The Wall Street Journal's Ben Kesling reports that the Trump administration's new homeless czar is looking at making significant shifts in the nation's philosophy for getting people housed. Over the course of recent years, the philosophy that's really come to the fore and been most influential on public housing is the housing first model. This the idea that for people who are in desperate need of a place to live, that just getting the person into housing is required to even stabilize them, just to get their life with some sort of day-to-day consistency. Then you can talk about supportive services and how best to help them in other challenges, financially, mental health, substance abuse, safety, other areas, life management. The competing model is one that says that's really not a helpful model to put people whose lives are in total disarray or at risk into housing without them buying in to supportive services to turn their lives around. Joining us is the writer of that Wall Street Journal piece, reporter Ben Kesling. Ben, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
How is this shift being taken the U.S. Interagency Council on Homelessness, and how might this shift manifest itself?
Well, the U.S. Interagency Council on Homelessness is sort of the top. That's the top level federal authority for homelessness policy, and really, it's sort of the figurehead for what the federal government wants to do. It's the sort of the megaphone that the administration brings to things and sets some of the philosophical groundwork that trickles down into federal programs like at Housing and Urban Development, at VA, et cetera. The new head, Robert Marbot, has said that housing first, the philosophy that you just sort of talked about, his claim is that it has failed the homeless population in the United States over the past few years. We've seen homeless numbers tick up a bit. And he says that uncoupling services, things like addressing job placement, if you have substance abuse, behavioral health issues, by uncoupling that from housing, you essentially don't set people up for success. You don't solve the underlying problems that probably cause them to become homeless in the first place. He wants to see services and housing tied more closely together, and that really flies, in some ways, would fly in the face of what's established best practices, which is this thing called Housing First, something that really came about in the 1990s, which said, as you pointed out, unless you've got a place where you can go every night and you know that you've got a roof over your head, then you're not going to be set up to deal with some of these other things. That's a priority. And Dr. Marbot, the new head of the Interagency Council, wants to in some ways, it's odd because he wants to almost relook at Housing First. He hasn't said that he wants to scrap the policy completely. And in fact, he pointed out that there are some programs that rely on a housing first philosophy, such as one program that the VA and Housing and Urban Development use, which is a housing first philosophy, but it requires intensive case management services to work through those things. So he wants to just make sure that services, housing come together, and that housing isn't given to someone with no strings attached. That's what he's looking at.
And there are nuances here. I don't want to be presenting this too starkly because everybody agrees there's a need for both housing and a tremendous need for supportive services. This isn't, it's not like the Housing First people don't believe it's essential for people to get help with their lives. But I think of the non-housing first model as putting some sort of an onus on the person who's homeless to buy in to the fact that they're going to undergo drug treatment or they're going to meet with a mental health professional or take their medications if they're dealing with bipolar disorder or schizophrenia or something like that. And is that largely the view that you think is being proposed here by Robert Marbot, the head of the U.S. Interagency Council on Homelessness, that the individual has to make that kind of a commitment?
Well, I think that you made a very good point, first of all, which is there is no black and white on housing first or some other model. There are many shades of gray within the definitions of sort of the way everybody looks at, well, what does housing first mean for this agency versus this agency versus this advocacy group, et cetera. Like they're from talking with advocates around the country, and even in places like Europe who look at housing first, they said that the idea that people can just reject having any services and get housing with no strings attached, that concept doesn't really exist. There's always case management that is required on some level, and it's how much of that, when you have that case manager come in, how much of that case management is tied to required services, and how much of it is that the case manager works with a person and allows them to sort of tailor the approaches that they want. They may not want to deal with behavioral health stuff right now. They may not want to deal with job placement right now. They want to deal with one thing before the other, and sometimes that's not what the case manager may see as the priority. And what Dr. Marbot seems to want to have is that there is, when you have that case manager plugged in, that there is less intensive choice that's available on the part of the person who is homeless to sort of tailor their services to themselves, that they are going to have more requirements to do what a case manager sees as being in their best interest.
And there's also the issue of, you know, whether if people feel coerced, does that, you know, mean in the long run their buy-in isn't as deep as it would be otherwise? Are there people who, but otherwise, you know, wouldn't go to drug treatment if the carrot wasn't that they were going to get a safe, clean place to live? So, you know, you can argue, I guess, both sides of that. And we're talking about individuals, and you know, everybody is different, of course, as to their circumstance in homelessness. There is another factor here, Ben, that I was curious about. That's the practical one of creating places for people to live. And my sense is that neighbors of housing for low-income or homeless people are perhaps going to be more willing to accept it if they know there's a requirement for people to get help, get treatment as a condition of living there, than if someone is just moving in without that being a condition. And I wonder if that's something at all that at the federal level is being discussed. I do think that's an issue locally.
That's sort of the almost like a not in my backyard question.
Yeah.
Like, is, you know,
or in my backyard, but with terms and conditions.
Right. And I think that is likely an underlying aspect of it. It's not something that the new homelessness are directly addressing me when I was speaking with him. But there is, I mean, that gets into a deeper question of, what are we doing to incentivize local populations to, you know, municipalities, cities, towns to be more welcoming to homeless population moving in? Does that mean that we need to increase the value of vouchers? Do we need to have more services that are guaranteed so that, you know, the person moving in is, like you said, going to be having certain preconditions addressed? Does it mean we need to address the underlying housing stock so that there's more places for people who are transitioning out of homelessness and have low income housing? And that's something that he did address, and many advocates that I spoke with want to see that fixed as well. I mean, LA is a place where you have rising rents, and vouchers may not be able to keep up with the cost of getting rent.
Well, and there's still a huge waiting list too for vouchers. Thank you, Ben. I really appreciate your article. Really caught my attention, and I think it's a great start to this conversation about these competing philosophies. Really appreciate your being with us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Ben Kessling, Wall Street Journal reporter, whose piece caught my eye, New Homelessness Czar, takes aim at longstanding policy. That policy is housing first. We're going to talk about the policies, how they play out in the real world, and what concerns people have about either approach. You're listening to Air Talk on 89.3 KPCC, back in just 90 seconds. Wonderful to have you with us this afternoon on Air Talk. Just want to remind you, about 2 hours, 20 minutes from now, of NPR's live coverage of the Senate impeachment vote of President Trump. We heard just a few minutes ago that Republican Senator Mitt Romney of Utah will vote to convict the president. He's at this point believed to be the only Republican who will vote against the president. He's expected to easily withstand this challenge and the impeachment from the House of Representatives. But we will have that for you coming up. And I did math wrong. I always pride myself on doing the math on the clock accurately. It's 1 hour and 20 minutes, as Fiona Ng, our senior producer, corrected me. Thank you. You correct me on all kinds of stuff, Fiona, but that's why I don't usually mess up the clock. That's one of my strengths, I'd like to think. All right, 1 hour and 20 minutes live coverage here on KPCC. Right now, we're talking about philosophies for how best to provide housing and supportive services for people who are in need. Joining me from the Los Angeles Homeless Services Authority, known as LASA, its interim executive director, Heidi Marston. Ms. Marston, thank you very much for being with us today. I appreciate it. What are your concerns, first of all, if the federal government were to move away from the Housing First model?
Thanks for having me, and I appreciate the discussion. I think this is a really timely discussion for us to be having. You know, what we know across the country and here in Los Angeles is housing obviously has a limited stock, but it works in ending homelessness for people who are living on our streets. I think that there are a lot of similarities between what's being proposed and what the practice is fundamentally. We too believe, as advocates of Housing First, that housing is a basic human need. We believe that housing should be provided in partnership with supportive services. That said, we also believe that people who are experiencing homelessness have just as much of ability and autonomy and as much of a right to determine what their path is as anybody else would. And what I mean by that is there shouldn't be preconditions set on you obtaining housing. Housing is, you know, basic on the Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And until somebody has a stable roof over their head, again, coupled with these supportive services, it's going to be hard to move past that. You know, on the flip side, there are lots of schools of thought that people should be in 12-step programs or obtain certain milestones, whether it's sobriety or employment, prior to receiving housing. What we try to do, as we're practicing this model in LA and across the country, is say, if somebody says they want a 12-step program, they want to achieve sobriety or employment prior to moving into a housing program, that's great, and we'll facilitate that. But we, as the system or as case managers, aren't going to be the ones to decide that for people. We're going to give them the ability to decide that for themselves.
What about the point I raised with our guest, reporter Ben Kessling of the Wall Street Journal, that there is an issue about the effect on nearby residents if, you know, you're looking at either a new facility or rehabilitated building for people to move into, that there are neighbors' concerns if people are coming in without housing conditioned on them working some kind of a program or some mitigation of life challenges they're dealing with. You think that that is a real issue in terms of acceptance of units in residential areas?
I think just like our neighbors who are housed don't have requirements on whether or not they remain housed, those of us who are unhoused should have the same expectations placed on us. That said, it doesn't mean that folks who are experiencing homelessness who move into communities should be disruptive. And as I've said, I think that supportive services are a necessary requirement. But sometimes things like sobriety, as an example of what people see a lot of times on the street, is not the primary goal of somebody. When somebody moves into housing, oftentimes we see their needs for supportive services are more aligned with, let's go to the grocery store and help you pick out what it means to have food in your refrigerator. Let's help you pick out a bath soap because you have a shower that you can use every night. And building up those basic skills for some of these people who have been on the street for a really long time is important. And over time, you know, accomplishing these longer term goals. But I don't believe that people who are unhoused right now should have a different set of standards or requirements for housing than people who are housed.
We're talking with Heidi Marston, the interim executive director of the Los Angeles Homeless Services Authority, known as LASA. I'm taking your calls, and I'll get to them in just a moment at 866-893-KPECC. Also with us, the CEO of the Union Rescue Mission, Skid Row, downtown Los Angeles, the Reverend Andy Bales. Andy, thank you for joining us. Do you have concerns about the dominance of the Housing First model?
Well, I'm not sure that it's dominating. I think it's in correlation with the exponential growth of people struggling on our streets. If it is dominating, I think it's caused a disaster as far as homelessness on the streets and people devastated by homelessness. And that's why it's the number one issue in the United States. And I really believe there's a shift to more responsibility and holding folks responsible when they do have housing to a higher standard of living and more secure facilities. And you hit it on the head with Ben and with Heidi. Neighbors will not let programs into their neighborhoods unless they have a level of trust in the management and in the security and in the behavior of the guests. No longer will they allow drugs to freely flow, alcohol to freely flow in and out of an apartment complex. They those units just will not be established unless neighbors gain some trust. And I don't know if you know, but in Des Moines, Iowa, I kind of launched Housing First, supportive housing. And one of the first things we did was declare that, you know, you can have a beer in your room, but if it flows out of your room and disrupts the community, we're going to address this. We had drug dealing going on in the apartments that we took over, and we had to remove the drug gangs and the drug sales out of the apartments. And what we have in Los Angeles especially is freely flowing alcohol and drugs and gang access to those apartments. And it just doesn't work. We have nowhere to send our guys in recovery because of the when we leave, they graduate and they move in, they have to come back because they cannot hold on to the sobriety in the local permanent supportive housing first harm reduction model. That's the deal we have to repeat, is harm reduction model comes with Housing First in Los Angeles, and people are adamant about it. Ben is a clear thinker, wonderful thinker. Heidi is a wonderful thinker, approves of services. But there are people who are so dogmatic about the Housing First harm reduction model, they will not intervene in people's lives at all. In fact, their philosophy empowers and enables drug addiction. And we need to be about recovery and life transformation of people, not letting them die a lonely death in their room from an overdose.
Heidi, I mean, you made the point essentially that people who are getting housing should be treated the same way as people who are already housed. And they, you know, people who can afford to pay rent don't have to go through some sort of behavioral requirements or interventions. But you know, I think what Andy Bales is arguing here is this is really a different population that requires much more, you know, stringent kind of intervention and a certain standard of expectation for how one behaves when you live in a facility that's provided to you. Your response to that?
Yeah, I think that it goes both ways, right? So just like there's requirements placed on people who are living in housing, whether you're coming from experiencing homelessness or you're moving from another apartment building, there should be the same expectations on you in regards to your tenancy. So, you know, to Andy's point around, you know, walking around outside the building with alcohol or drug dealing, all of those things happen, some of it coming from people who are housed and others, and those are conditions of your lease and requirements that a supportive service perspective would say our goal is to help you maintain your tenancy and to help you and to support you in a way that does that. And it doesn't mean that you have free rein. It means you have to follow the rules that are established in the building like everybody else does. And so it would be the same standard across the board.
I'd love to hear from listeners on any of the issues that we've raised. And I think anyone can weigh in on the issue of your neighborhood where you live. Would it make a difference to you if individuals coming into a new building that's rehabbed or built in your neighborhood have certain requirements to be in programs and getting those services, buying into them concurrently with being housed, or whether they would be able to come in and turn down those supportive services or not fully participate? Does it make a difference in your willingness to have those folks as your neighbors? 866-893-KPECC. Back in 1 minute on Air Talk. It's Air Talk on 89.3 KPECC. I'm Larry Mantle. We're talking about the new homelessness czar at the federal level who is questioning the Housing First policy, which has been highly influential as cities, counties, and the federal government attempts to address homelessness. The argument is that Housing First, in some cases, doesn't have enough buy-in from people who are being housed to having services, whether it's dealing with substance abuse challenges, whether it's mental health challenges that would benefit from medication or from talk therapy or anything else that might help them with their life management, with their personal safety, and their ability to care for themselves. My question for you is, what do you think of the two different models? And would it matter to you if we're talking about new housing going into your community, specifically designed for those who are now homeless? Do you support a Housing First without any sorts of requirements being put on those individuals? Or do you think that there should be some requirement of buy-in for help with their lives? 866-893-KPECC or the Air Talk page, kpecc.org. Tom in Glendale, you're on Air Talk. What do you think?
I serve currently as a county commissioner in the County of Los Angeles for veterans. And one of our three main points of connection to the community is housing. And the reality is the gentleman who's the housing czar in D.C. is being disingenuous. The best example of how Housing First has been successful in Salt Lake City and the state of Utah, they came to the point where they brought in Housing First and reached a homeless population, which is relatively at zero, and it's less expensive to put people into housing and have case management as an additional service. It isn't a black and white situation of either or. And the reality is in a housing first situation with impacted population, whether it's veterans or single parents or families, the manager of the apartment units is not just someone who you call because your water heater doesn't work or just to put a new light switch or a light in. They are much more a case management form of manager of the units. We've seen it very successful in the 1,200 units we're building over 20 years at the VA in West LA. We're looking at it in what we have in Glendale, two different places. We have it in Long Beach. And Housing First does have with it the responsibilities that you have to be not disruptive of your neighbors. And yeah. The reality is, when I worked at Disney and I had to go get another unit when I moved from one place to another, I had to go through quite a checkpoint and vetting and a lease agreement to get there. So Housing First doesn't add as many strictures as some people are saying, but it also allows you to then be stable for assistance in employment.
All right, Tom, I need to break in. We're short on time. Tom in Glendale, good to hear from you after it's been a while since you've called in. Andy Bale, CEO, Union Rescue Mission. What do you know about the Salt Lake City model?
Well, I know that it was an absolute myth, and it has been totally debunked. And then we bought into that myth, and that's what we're carrying out in Los Angeles. And that's why we have 44,000 people on the streets, because we believed in the Utah myth.
What happened in Salt Lake?
They altered the numbers. They were incorrect in how they addressed the homelessness. They did focus on chronic homelessness only, and they reduced it, but they made a math error, and not to the level that they said they reduced it. And instead, they went on a marketing campaign and said, we ended homelessness in Utah. Well, take a trip to Salt Lake City, and you will see they have far from ended homelessness. It's an absolute disaster. Even while they said they were ending homelessness, they had 14,000 families on the streets.
Andy, hold that thought. Heidi Marston, Lhasa, what do you know of the Salt Lake City model?
Thank you. I appreciate the perspective there. I think what it tells us is that the HUD-VASH program that Ben referenced earlier, and I think Tom was mentioning as well, this works. We've seen a 50% reduction in the last 10 years in veteran homelessness because of this model, which embraces a housing-first model, but really importantly, it incorporates a services component that matches the level of need. Some people need to be seen once a day by a case manager, and over time that decreases. Some people need to be seen once a week or once every 3 weeks, depending on what the situation is. So I think we need to take the lessons we've learned from successful programs like HUD-VASH and try to implement that in the way that they're really embracing housing first.
All right. Let me share some listener comments. Callie in South Pasadena says, I think the idea one size fits all is a fundamental error. Many residents I talk to say if tax money's involved, voters have a certain right to expect behavior from someone being housed. Deborah in Venice says, I'd be more comfortable if people going into bridge housing had a requirement to stay sober, because otherwise surrounding neighbors pay the price. And Selena in Altadena says, I'm with the Housing Works Support Services Agency. We tried the Housing First model. You get the cream of the crop, people who follow processes, and then we leave out the most vulnerable. You can share your comments on the AirTalk page, kpcc.org. My thanks to Heidi Marston, Interim Executive Director of the LA Homeless Services Authority, and the Reverend Andy Bale, CEO of the Union Rescue Mission. Fresh Air with Terry Gross is next, then at 1 o'clock, live NPR coverage of the impeachment vote in the Senate.